The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in to Nosebleeds, a production of WFUV Sports. How's it going, everybody? Will Talon here alongside, oh man, what a show. What a show we have. Jack Warner in front of me. Brian Raybacks to my direct right. That's awesome. That's a great configuration, as we're going to put it, for this point in time. And we have a nice little debrief show on this Wednesday afternoon, April 10th. It's a nice day here in the Bronx. We're starting to creep into those 60 and 70 degree days, and it's really starting to become baseball season once again. And guys, some of the best baseball being played in New York over where we're at in the Bronx. The Yankees off to their best start since 2003. There's only been four times in their franchise history where they've gone on, 10-2 to start a season, and 2024 is one of them. Crosstown in Queens, it's been a little bit of a hectic roller coaster ride. That was quite the process by me, but we got through it. And that kind of is how the Mets season is going to start. But one thing that I mentioned last week on Nosebleeds was that for Mets fans, the offense shouldn't be of too much concern because of the names in that lineup. And they've shown that. It's really been the pitching. And we'll get into all of that. But first, Jack, Brian, how are we doing today?
I want to start things off with a special thank you to Will Talon, because last night I actually called him in a panic, because it was long story, project, school's happening, school is schooling all of us, a lot of stuff going on. And I had a project that was taking me way late into the night to complete. I like to prep for these shows as much as I can, but obviously there's a little extra preparation to be done to A-host, which I was originally supposed to do. Called up Will up, said, hey, buddy, you want to switch spots real quick so, you know, you can do that A-host justice, because I really am going to have a late night. I could prep, but I'm going to have a late night. I'd rather have you A-host this. And he stepped up big time, took a huge weight off my back. But no matter what, I was just stoked to be here with this crew, because I got Brian Raybacks over here, who I was delighted to see get another trip to Yankee Stadium to cover the New York Yankees a few days ago. And no, guys, it's exciting. You know, I think I've watched more opening, because I watch baseball. It's our favorite sport, like whatever. But you know, 162 games is a long season. A lot of times you tap into opening day, and then from there, you kind of, it goes up and down with how available you are to watch the game throughout the season, and up and down, left and right. I have watched more opening couple weeks baseball this season than I think I have in my entire life. It has been constant baseball every night. A lot to talk about in the tri-state area especially, but I'm just happy to be here with you boys.
And it's weird for me, because I feel like the baseball season really just snuck up on me. It was those years.
It started kind of early, too.
It did start, like, end of March.
March 26th.
You're not seeing that coming. But overall, I've just been watching a lot of baseball. I will say, great to be back at the press room at Yankee Stadium, just getting a chance to cover once again after a long off season and a lot of time off. Also been to Yankee Stadium twice as a spectator. 3-0 if you combine all three of those appearances. It's pretty fitting. Lou Orlando. Only one to see a Yankee home loss this year, but we got to congratulate him a little bit. He broke his losing streak last
year. Yeah, let's clap it up.
A for Lou. 14-game losing streak
dating
for Lou
back to June 8th of last year.
That is,
but you know what that is, guys?
Of.
That's nose to the grindstone. We don't stop. Lou Orlando, he's back on track.
He did not
he's
stop.
He's 1-14 in his last 15, but he's 1-0 in his last
and
one.
And you know what? It's a lot of peaks and valleys in this game, so... Well, let's get a little hot streak going for Lou here. He needs it more than anybody right now. Happy for the guy.
Well, speaking of hot streaks, we're going to open actually not with our New York local teams, but specifically with a team that is going to heavily rival the Yankees. Now, of course, all the American League East teams have some kind of rivalry with the Yankees, but this team more specifically now kind of reaching the pinnacle of the AL East, and the Yankees are going to go toe-to-toe with them. It's the Baltimore Orioles. They beat the Boston Red Sox, Jack's team, 7-1 last night.
Yep.
Good start for the Red Sox. Okay start for the Orioles. Trevor Story, though, obviously going down with a dislocated shoulder, and I believe there is some kind of fracture, if I read correctly.
Yeah, and it's going to require season-ending surgery, you got to just feel for the guy. It's already, you know, he already was under
70% of games under that contract.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, he was already under a lot of, I think, undeserved criticism for the contract that I don't think was a great contract on the Red Sox side of things at all. But I think he took a lot of heat for signing the contract that he was offered. I think he takes a lot of the brunt of, like, oh, I can't believe the Sox signed this guy and gave him all this money and yada, yada. It's been tough, you know, seeing him struggle to stay healthy, because think about Trevor Story in his heyday. I mean, this guy was special, and he still is. He's, you know, this is a big loss for the Red Sox, especially last year was injury plagued as well. He comes back, doesn't play the type of baseball that we're, you know, privy to seeing Trevor Story play. So, you know, definitely some heartbreak early in the season, because you even saw him interviewing about it and he's holding tears back. It's got to be such a tough, tough experience to go through all the excitement of spring training, get ready for a full season, you're back to normal, you're healthy, and then within the first 15 games, you're injured and you're out for the rest of the season. It's tough. It's definitely not a for as good of a start as the Sox are having to the season for what was expected of them. It's definitely kind of blocking that out for right now. It's kind of a tough spot over in Boston right now.
And a team like the Orioles is only going to make it tougher, especially with the breaking news that came out last night, early this morning. Jackson Holliday, the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Oh, yes.
He gets called up to the major leagues. Man, this is going to be very special. He's quite the talent. He was drafted just a couple of years ago. And, man, he is quite the athlete in the field. Going to do some special things for the Baltimore Orioles for hopefully years to come. Obviously, the son of former All-Star Matt Holliday and former New York Yankee, but obviously his heyday came back with the Colorado Rockies and the St. Louis Cardinals. But Jackson, son of Matt, gets the call. And guys, let's leave the Orioles alone here for a second. How is that going to shake up things with the Yankees, Brian?
The Orioles, they're not going to go away. That's what at least the perception is going to be now. I mean, you look at Jackson Holliday and what he ended up doing in the brief moments we've gotten to see him showcase his talents. He's been in spring training for 2 years, and in both years he excelled, got a lot more playing time this spring, got 45 at-bats, hit .311 with an OPS at the .954 mark, so was really impressive. Former number one overall pick, knew the special talent he was, and now he's here. I'm impressed that Baltimore brought him up as early as they did, because we used to see a lot in the previous CBA of teams keeping prospects down until the end of April so they could manipulate the service time, but that's not what they see here. Now they just want to it looked like they want him to just get a couple reps in AAA and then bring him up when they felt he was ready, and obviously they kind of knew he was ready after spring training. These Orioles are young. They're dynamic, and they're really, really talented. And I know that the Yankees have been off to an incredible start to start the year, and that should not be glossed over. But you look at the Orioles, and they're just going to be a real tough out for the entire season. So I'm excited at least getting to see that potential race as the season goes on. If Jackson Holliday's as good as he was in the spring and in AAA at this level, then the Orioles are going to be a really tough out in the AL East.
We all knew that this kid was special. We all knew that you know, we're watching in awe as he's tearing things up in the minor leagues and in a couple of spring trainings. But the moment that I knew that this kid was ready was, you know, watching through spring training and wondering, you know, we were all anticipating his eventual, pretty much inevitable call-up, being the top prospect in baseball. But then you reach the end of spring training and he has to head back down to AAA again. And some people were kind of upset about that. It was like, oh, you know, there were some people that were under the impression that this kid was going to start this season in the major leagues. And what does he do? He goes down to AAA to start the season. And in his first at-bat of the season, hits an absolute tank of a solo home run in the first inning, and I was like, this kid's ready. Like, this kid is ready for Major League Baseball. He is just he's been working too hard for too long, has been performing for too hard for too long. And that's another thing that I think really excites me about him being on the Orioles of all teams, is this is a youthful team. This is a young roster that, you know, really kind of had the wheels fall off last year despite how good they were during the regular season. And I really do think that Jackson Holliday being able to hop in this early in the season to make a name for himself, I think it does two things. One, I think it's mutually beneficial because, one, if it works out right from the jump, you have your guy for the rest of the season, your top prospect who's on the brink of being a star, and you know, you move on and you have a stud now to add to an already really talented team. But the other plus side to bringing him up this early in the year is, let's say it doesn't go well. Let's say he doesn't adjust that well. It's a quick send back down with plenty of time in the AAA season and the Major League season to get him more reps, see what's needed at the Major League level, see what they're lacking over in Baltimore. And if an opportunity arises later in the season, which there is plenty of time for it to happen, he can be called right back up. I think him being called up this early in the season is honestly a very low-pressure situation for both parties, both the Orioles and Jackson Holliday.
And I think it's kind of an Anthony Volpe situation just a little bit, because a lot of those concerns were there last year with Anthony Volpe, not the number one prospect in all baseball, but very highly ranked and the number one prospect in the Yankees system. And a lot of people had concerns, you know, kind of similarly to what you just said, Jack, if Volpe can't put it together, they have that option of sending him down. But, you know, Aaron Boone said something very important. There's only so much you can do in the minor leagues. It's when you get that call, sure, those options are there. Jackson's going to have those options for however long he needs them. Same with Anthony Volpe. It's there for the Yankees and for the Orioles' expense. However, these are players that you want on the major league roster, because Jackson Holliday is going to play alongside Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Grayson Rodriguez. That was the whole plan. Holliday,
Gunnar Henderson.
Gunnar,
there's so many names.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so many.
And the other thing is, I really like how he fits into the scheme in Baltimore right now, because obviously he's a shortstop, but he's going to probably be at second base upon arrival into the MLB because you have Gunnar Henderson at shortstop. And I think what that does is it allows him, playing in the any infield position in Major League Baseball is very difficult, but I do think that there's no position like playing a Major League shortstop. Like, that's just the ground you have to cover, the athleticism you have to display. It really is for the cream of the crop athletes in the MLB to be an efficient shortstop. And I think allowing him to get his first looks at second base alongside a very good Gunnar Henderson at shortstop is a really good starting role for a young kid like Jackson Holliday. And the other thing, I was reading about the move and how he sort of fits into Baltimore. The other thing is, this is very, very specific, but if he can, you know, rise to the major leagues and immediately make an impact on the offensive side of things, if he can immediately hit like an efficient major league hitter, Orioles second basemen this year are some of the weakest batting players on the entire roster. I think their second baseman right now are hitting like just a hair over 200, like an OPS in like the 630s. So like the offensive production has not been coming from the second base position in Baltimore. So if you can, you know, sort of bridge that gap with an efficient bat who can also play a serviceable second base while you're growing him into, you know, what you want him to become as a major league ball player, I really, really, really like how the current state of the Orioles fits his arrival right now.
And then you have to...
It's partially like what is so valuable about Jackson Holliday is that he's so versatile, where he can play really good shortstop, but they also, if they have a hole at second base, which they're kind of dealing with to start the season, and Jordan Westberg's not necessarily in the upper echelon hitters right now, he can just slide in there, and he can be a valuable piece, and he can hit well, which we've seen that he can mash in both AAA and in spring training and in the sample sizes that we've gotten. So he's an athlete. He can play multiple positions, and really you can plug and play him anywhere. And like you were saying, Will, there's not a lot of or I think it was Jack, I apologize, not a lot of pressure on either side right now. It's not like the Volpe situation that you brought up. I'm sorry, I got my kind
just
of
a little
just
mix up.
Little, a little mix it's up. Little it happens. It's been a minute since I've been on the pod here, but listen, it's not like Volpe, because Volpe was brought up for opening day. He was the opening day shortstop. He was the shortstop, and there's a lot of pressure we put on a 21-year-old who's doing that for the first time in New York, no less, in a division that's a dogfight like the AL East. So they've given Jackson Holliday some time to kind of just rest a little bit, mentally ease into things, and now I think we're going to see him really excel because he's been given the necessary time, and he's not being just thrown into the fire. He's gotten the necessary development that he's needed, and now I think we're going to see him be really talented when he showcases what he can do at the major league level.
And I think an important note, too, before we segue into our locals talk, is that you also don't want to stunt the growth of Gunnar Henderson. We're talking about the rookie of the year for the American League.
Right.
That has a lot of value to it. So why stunt that growth whatsoever? He has an entire year under his belt where he dominated. Jackson Holliday, given his stature and his place in Major League Baseball right now, even though he hasn't played a game, you got to give that nod to Gunnar Henderson because of the work that he's already shown at the Major League level. You can anticipate that Gunnar Henderson will probably move over to third base and Jackson Holliday will take over at shortstop at some point. But as of right now, I don't see that as something the Orioles should do. I think you got to let Gunnar Henderson develop on his own, because we can't forget he was also one of the top prospects in all of baseball before Jackson Holliday was even drafted. So there's a lot going on. As you said, Brian, a lot of names on the Major League roster that are really young, a lot of names that are on that AAA roster that are blocked because of the Major League guys. So the Orioles have a lot going right for them. My only concern, there could be a lot going wrong if they don't push the right buttons, and I think not stunting these top prospects' growth is very important. And Jackson Holliday, no matter how good he is the low man on the totem pole there. So I really don't think that's going to be too much of an issue. And they kind of got lucky with the guy that's the lowest man on the totem pole, a guy that's been around big league clubhouses his entire life. So he knows what the drill is. He knows what he needs to do. Not saying that Gunnar Henderson didn't know what the drill was, but you know, being in a clubhouse since you were like 3 years old,
it can't hurt.
It says something. And not just a clubhouse, but winning baseball clubhouses. Matt Holliday, we can't forget, he was a pivotal part of that 2007 run for the Colorado Rockies and multiple World Series appearances for the St. Louis Cardinals as well. So Jackson Holliday has seen a lot of winning baseball, and he becomes one of, I believe, the second youngest Oriole called up at the age of 20 years old. The last person to play at the age of 20 was actually significantly younger than him. Even though he was 20, we're looking at the days. It was Manny Machado. He had just turned 20 about a month before he got called up to the major leagues. Jackson Holliday will be 21 at some point this year or towards the end of this year. But still, that should show how good Jackson Holliday is that this is just the second time they've ever done that. And the first guy that got that nod is going to be a Hall of Famer at some point. But that makes me want to transition into our local teams talk. Let's talk about those New York Yankees, obviously now with a huge threat in the Baltimore Orioles. But the Yankees, they keep rolling ahead 10-2. They win another series, their fourth series win of the year. They're 4-for-4 in that department tonight. I'll actually be at that game covering the game for WFUV Sports. They're
Welcome
going for the
back,
sweep.
Will Talent.
Thank you, making your 2024 debut.
I'm super pumped. I can't wait to get back there. Haven't been there at all, even as a fan, so excited to see what's going on in general. But let's talk about the team for just a second. A 3-2 win yesterday, an 8-0 win on Monday. And, you know, that Blue Jays series, they played well. That bullpen got hit hard. Very, very hard. Now, a great time to play the Miami Marlins, beat up on the Marlins, get those wins. Nestor Cortez, Carlos Rodon, been exceptional. They've saved that bullpen. Nestor Cortez went 8 innings pitched and only gave up 2 hits. Sure, say what you want. It's just the Marlins. But that's exactly who you want to play when you're slumping as bad as Nestor Cortez, especially on opening day. The Yankees came back and won that game, but Nestor, Brian, he really needed that start the other night.
Yeah, and Boone was asked post-game on Sunday if they were going to need to lean on Nestor a little more, given that fact that their bullpen had been so worn out from the weekend, and he kind of gave a yes, but at the same time, like, we have the guys ready. But it turns out that they didn't really need to worry about Nestor at all. He went 8 shutout innings. It was a really quick game, too, the quickest Yankee game since 1992.
I was going to say, it was like 2 hours and 1 minute, yeah. Wasn't it?
It was, yep, an earlier start time, too. It was supposed to be a 2 o'clock game, and then it became a 6 o'clock because of the eclipse. So it started an hour earlier than it usually does, and it was crazy. I was just sitting in the cafeteria here. What a spot that I was in.
That is the spot. The worst college cafeteria in the United States collegiate system.
The food did not make my stomach feel great, but yep. I digress. It was around 8:30, and then I look and see the game's already over.
It was
crazy. So it's just, he was working quickly and not getting into trouble early, which is what we saw both in Houston and in Arizona. Struggled in the first inning, but really just getting that smooth first one was huge, and he was just able to cruise the rest of the way through, and he was striking out batters. The stuff looked sharp, looked like 2022 Nestor Cortez. So with him, if they're penciling him in kind of as the ace without Gerrit Cole, then he needs performances like that, and I think that performance settles you in a little more that, okay, Nestor can still deal, and he can give you length, which we hadn't really seen much of last year at all. So encouraging series for Nestor Cortez, and just an encouraging 4 series for the Yankees. They don't lose. They're just off to a 10-2 start against 4 playoff teams from last year as well. I don't know if the Marlins really count right now, given where
they are, but it's early.
It's still been a great start to the year. I don't think you can draw up any better, Jack.
Yeah, and I think, again, going off how those first 2 starts looked for Nestor Cortez, the main thing that everyone was sort of talking about was first inning, second inning, just early in the game, he was struggling to have a good, definite start to a game. And I think going 8, he didn't even have to go 8 innings, but the fact that he went 8 innings after 2 starts like that was exactly what he needed. Because the main thing that was the cause of concern after those first 2 starts was, how can you ever have any sort of stability when it comes time for a Nestor Cortez start when you're already working out of holes early in the game? For him to go 8 innings and 8 innings of shutout ball and have the command, because that was the other thing. Their command in this series looked phenomenal, because I also want to talk about Rodon. Rodon pitched arguably his best game as a Yankee yesterday. But the thing that I always think back to is last year's Yankees, where the talent was there. They had talented pitchers, a couple of which who were having some rough seasons. But for the most part, talented arms front to back, but you just never knew what you were getting when it wasn't a Cole start. You never knew if you could get yourself through a whole series based on the way that that starting rotation looked last year. There was a consistency that was just not there. And so I think this Miami series really should give you a lot of confidence about is just seeing a starting rotation that doesn't even have Gerrit Cole back yet, and is already looking like, a rotation that's going to keep pressure off of their bullpen, not going to put their bullpen in high-pressure positions, not going to have to rely on their bullpen like they had to do at times last season. I was amazed by Nestor. That was the one game of the series against Miami that I watched so far was the Nestor start, and I was blown away. Because I've also jokingly, I actually have no gripes with Nestor Cortez, but as a Boston fan, it's fun to bust chops on Yankee players. So I've given my fair share of jokes about Nestor Cortez. He blew me away. I mean, just it was like night and day compared to what you saw the first 2 games from him.
And we have to keep in mind, too, the first 2 starts that Nestor Cortez has in this season, playing against the Houston Astros,
right.
Don't really care what kind of start they're off to. I can guarantee you they're going to be at the top of the standings come June, most likely. And that is a team that's been to the ALCS 7 straight years. Then you had to turn around and make a start against the defending NL champions. That's not an easy task whatsoever. The biggest takeaway I took from Nestor Cortez in those first 2 starts, that obviously was not an issue on Monday night, his inability to get guys out in 0-2 counts. I know that sounds extremely rudimentary, but
No, it's important,
not,
though.
It's not as easy as some people think, especially when you're a pitcher like Nestor Cortez. You talk about all the funky stuff that he does, all the different pitches he can throw, but he's not your typical pitcher in today's day and age. At 0-2, you're going to reel it back, and you're going to throw 99, and you're going to go for that strikeout. Nestor is not that kind of pitcher, and he wasn't able to do what you were saying, Brian, of mixing in those secondary pitches and getting those guys out. And that makes it tougher when you got to play teams that were extremely good last year. And even to the Marlins' credit, they were really good last year. Not they're 1-11 to start this year. That's why he needed this series so specifically, because he can now gauge how those secondary pitches are going to look. He got the feel of, because at the end of the day, these are major league hitters. The Marlins, they're 1-11. That lineup is still, it has names.
Yeah.
It has names in it. And Carlos Rodon, 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 6 Ks, 2 walks. Love it. That's all we need. Give me 3 outs from the give me 3 innings, 9 outs from the bullpen. And that's the last point I want to make on the Yankees pitching. Another pitcher that I think really needed this series was Clay Holmes. I mean, he was spectacular last night, had a strikeout, and, you know, he didn't allow any base runners of his own, no hits, no walks. And that's really been an issue with him, I would say, since he's taken over full time as the closer, which is get in the game, let the first two guys on base. Not going to do it. You're going to play against the Astros, you're going to play against the Diamondbacks. Those outcomes that we saw are going to happen, and sometimes the offense isn't going to pick it up for you.
No, and I think that Clay Holmes, when you look at him, there's been moments where he's gotten a little unlucky, where he's not getting a lot of hard contact off of him. There's just some ground balls that are finding some holes, but good to see him last night just come in and shut the door very easily in a one-run game, too. I know it's always been an issue with him this year where he's getting the job done, but it's never, like, easy. So last night, a little refreshing to see him kind of just come in there and shut the door easily. But also, you look at the game last night with Carlos Rodon. If there's two pitchers on the Yankees staff that really needed to have good seasons, there's Nestor Cortez, and then timed up to like a 10th degree above him, there's Carlos Rodon with the disaster that was last season. And
it's rode over.
It's certain. Not as, hey.
It's actually it's, after it's actually over after great. Yesterday, it's not rode
he's
over in
really
the slightest.
Good this year. He's looked really,
he's looked
really
very
solid.
Good. And you know what? His velocity's back.
Yes.
And it's really important. Kind of making me see that maybe he wasn't ever really healthy last year because he's just dealing
oh, he wasn't.
With,
he was hurt all
with,
year.
Dealing with the back pain that
first
kept him
in
out
New York.
Until July, first season in New York, and he's down to like 92, 93, to occasionally touch 94. He really wasn't getting that velocity, and now you're seeing what he was doing with the Giants, 97, 98. He's like back to that range, and if they have that kind of stuff out of Rodon, he's the easy plug-in 1-1A from Gerrit Cole that they thought he was going to be and what got him the contract. So I've been really happy for him. I think he's done a nice job. I think he's getting himself into trouble a little bit too much. Walked a couple guys at the end of last night. He had to come out at 89 pitches. Kind of saw some blips of that in his first start in Houston. But overall, he's limiting damage and not allowing teams to really get him with the long ball like he was being tagged with last year. So Rodon, if there's a huge encouragement, like one piece that I want to take from the Yankees outside of their offense being very good to start the season and Soto and Volpe, etc., it's Rodon. He's looked really impressive to start the year.
And Marcus Stroman, he will get the ball tonight. Hopefully the Yankees going for that sweep. They hopefully get it. And Marcus Stroman, honestly, he's been the best pitcher in the rotation, has not given up an earned run yet
excellent.
This season against two extremely hard teams to navigate a lineup three times through, and Stroman's done that almost twice. So looking forward for myself to see him in pinstripes for the first time, and hopefully the Yankees go out and get a sweep. But before we move off the Yankees real quick, obviously, let's talk about the offense. I honestly don't really want to talk about how good the offense has been because there's so many different names we can go with. I mean, Alex Verdugo was the MVP last night. And Giancarlo Stanton, all of a sudden, here he is, having great ball games. His approach at the plate has been excellent. A little bit more bend in the knees and the stance. His first step out of the box has been excellent. Anthony Volpe, you could say all you want. He's batting .375 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs. That's exactly what you want to see. Juan Soto is Juan Soto. I mean, there's really nothing else you should mention there. I kind of want to mention, though, how quiet Aaron Judge has been. super, super quiet, batting under 200. I don't even think he's getting on base 30% of the time right now. He will get going, but I pose the question, what do you guys think is the reason as to why Judge has been so quiet? I'll go first. And personally, I think it's because Boone has been forced to drop him from 2 to 3. Soto's been taken over in that 2 spot for some games, and the Yankees have been rolling out a consistent lineup as of late. Love that. That's exactly what you need to do, especially if you're Aaron Boone. You're 10-2 in 12 games. You got to use the same lineup all the time. But I do wonder if Aaron Judge's struggles are because he's not in the 2 hole as much.
What are you thinking over there? I think a lot of his struggles so far are kind of coinciding with the fact that he was hurt in spring training,
very
and they
true.
Were taking it
yeah.
very carefully with him, so he wasn't getting a ton of at-bats at the end of the spring. So I think that's kind of just gotten him out of a funk, and if there's like one thing that I can look to explain him really not hitting much at all to start the season, it would be that. So I think that's playing a role. I think he's always said that he wants to hit third, so, and there's no way to really like pitch around Judge, because if Stanton's hitting and the way that he is, then they have to attack, and there's really no weak spot in the Yankee lineup right now. So I think it's like injury related, spring training at bat wise, but I think eventually he'll come around and he'll be fine hitting third of the order. But they have to switch him. They can easily interchangeable.
Yeah, I think switching him 2 to 3 is like an interesting thing to point out, because I could flirt with the idea of like, okay, you know, different batters at different parts of the order are attacked differently by pitchers. You may see a different approach from a pitcher in a 3 spot than you do a 2 spot, because a lot of times, I mean, this wasn't the case last year because Judge was hitting in the 2 spot, but you know, a lot of times when you're growing up playing baseball, even in the collegiate and in some pro teams, a lot of times it's more contact 1-2. You don't
Absolutely.
Get to power until 3-4-5. So perhaps, you know, maybe you know, he's seeing different looks from pitchers because of that one change in order spot. That's not really what was on my mind. I'm more in the same ballpark, no pun intended, as Brian in saying that, like, yes, he came back from injury at the end of last season, but I think with just the way that that season unfolded for the Yankees and how it collapsed right in front of our eyes, I don't think that Judge coming back from injury last season was the return of Judge. I think this is the return of Judge. I understand he hit decently well when he came back from his injury last season, but they had kind of already shipped it by the time Judge was back in the lineup last year. So I think this year it's the first, you know, fresh season where even Brian mentioned he was a little banged up in spring training. It limited his reps a little bit. I don't want to give like kind of a brush off like simple answer, but I really think this is only hopping off the page at us because it's Aaron Judge. Slow starts happen all the time. You know, I can point you, you know, we're about to talk about the Mets, where there's several bats that through these first couple series are extremely concerning, just because, but it's just because you're looking at the numerical value early in the season. I think Judge is going to be just fine. But it is interesting how differently a slow start is gauged with an elite player like Judge than it may be with a more everyday player who you don't think about as much.
The spring training injury is definitely something I could see him laboring right now. And obviously, he's more of a ground ball threat than Juan Soto. So obviously, Aaron Boone's a little bit handcuffed in that regard, because it's like, all right, want to get Captain going, but I run the risk of Gleyber Torres getting on base and then Judge immediately bouncing into a 6-4-3. Soto is less susceptible of that, so it makes sense. But I just posed that question because obviously his whole career he's been in that 2-hole. So you wonder, maybe that has something to do with it as well. But I do agree with your guys' points. I think that injury does have a lot to do with it. And I'm not saying Aaron Boone needs to make that change by any means, because obviously they're 10-2. It's working out just fine. Let Judge get going. He was the MVP of this league for a reason. He hit 62 home runs for a reason. I believe he will get going. That spring training injury will definitely take him some time, because he did miss some time in spring training alone to just recover from that. So I do see Judge getting going. We saw it towards the end of the Arizona series, but you know, now playing the Marlins, maybe today is one of those days.
I'm just kind of posing a question here to you guys, though, because I'm just trying to think back. I'm trying to go back into the filing cabinet in my time watching Aaron Judge. Has he really ever had a start to the season this slow before?
No. Last year, he started off excellent.
Because I joked about it with Lou for the home opener. I was like, I'm expecting to see a Judge homer today, because it feels like he always hits some sort of bomb on opening day at Yankee, or, you know, he usually starts off the season with a bang. So that's the other thing that I think is part of this. And I'm not trying to brush it off, but I think this is really the first time that anyone's really seeing a slow start out of the gate for Aaron Judge, which is a testament to him as a hitter and a player. But
sneakily in 2022, he at least wasn't hitting like as many home runs in April. Cause I think, remember, we got to like April 22nd or something, and he was at still just one home run.
Right.
So he was on that for a little while, but then obviously that year he really got it going, and that's what we're going to come to expect this year. He's obviously not going to be hitting below the Mendoza line for the entire year. But it's funny, though, you talk about Judge off to a slow start. When you look at what the lineup's doing with Soto and Stanton and Volpe, and now Verdugo is starting to really pick things up, you're almost like not even looking at the fact that Judge has really not put it together,
it's
which is so a testament to what the rest of the lineup's been doing.
It's so quiet that that's honestly a breath of fresh air, right, Brian?
Because I agree, yeah.
Going to those games last year, if Aaron Judge wasn't there, which most of the time he wasn't, you've relied on Jake Bowers and Billy McKinney to provide
you know,
the offense.
It's actually really funny, and I was thinking of sending this to you today, that there was a lineup that was just a screenshot of one of the lineups from last year that was sent to me, and I'm trying to find it right now. It was just like, you look at it, yeah. So it was a lineup: Calhoun, Torres, Rizzo, Donaldson,
Willie
Bowers,
Bangs,
LeMahieu, McKinney, Trevino, and Cabrera. Like, that's it's a night and day difference. Like,
oh yeah.
Not only with, you know, you add Soto and Stanton's back in there with Judge, but like Volpe in that lineup, Volpe's hitting now. So there's just, it's just great. Last year was such a bizarre year for the Yankees.
It was. It was injury riddled, and it was short of expectations, but obviously this year starting a lot better. The Yanks, like I said, going for the sweep of the Miami Marlins, hopefully their second sweep of the year. But now, you know, talking about the Marlins, let's go to the NL East rivals of the Marlins and crosstown rivals of the New York Yankees. That's the New York Mets, off to one of the worst starts that they had ever had, started to pick it up. As the offense started to pick it up, they go down to Atlanta and they play their arch nemesis, Atlanta Braves. And that's been quite the series. A lot of offense, solid pitching, one run ball. The offense, though, for the Mets, not an issue. Brandon Nimmo, out of nowhere, a two homer game, and he ties the game twice. An excellent performance by him all series long. And the bats are starting to quietly get going for the Mets as anticipated. Now, what wasn't really the issue in the first few games of the season was the pitching. That was what was of concern going into the season out of the offseason. And now we're kind of here. I'm not really too hung up on the starting rotation, so to say, because the names aren't there. And it just came out actually about 10 minutes ago. Kodai Senga placed on the 60-day injured list. So he's out for, you know, a couple more weeks, maybe a month now. So the Mets missing that arm for an extensive period of time. Kodai Senga, Cy Young votes, Rookie of the Year votes. He became the ace after the implosion of Verlander and Scherzer. That experiment obviously went miserably. Senga was the only bright spot. And now he's not a spot at all. He's just absent. So to me, guys, it's really the pitching. I watched the end of that first game that the Braves lost to the Mets. And the Mets were up by two. They gave up a run in that ninth inning. The Braves were inching back. And if it wasn't for Tyrone Taylor making an exceptional Gold Glove play out in left field, I don't think the Mets win that game. So, Jack, I think the main concern with the Mets, and we'll talk about J.D. Martinez because that's obviously a hot topic with the Mets, it's that bullpen. And, you know, Jack, that was always going to be the case.
Yeah, but I think it's components of the bullpen because you also saw through the first few games of the season, Drew Smith looking really, really good, especially after having a pretty rough season last year.
he was kind of a pleasant surprise from the opening two series. Both were sweeps. Or, sorry, not both were sweeps. They took one from the Tigers. But lost the opening two series, and one of the bright spots was Drew Smith. Edwin Diaz off to a phenomenal start, looking untouchable through his first couple, you know, chances at closing. It's specific pieces of the bullpen that make me nervous, because even in the win against Atlanta the other night, as you mentioned, Jorge Lopez almost blew that after such a up and down game that took everything out of the Mets bats to try to quiet an elite Atlanta Braves team. They DFA'd Michael Tonkin. That was a disastrous first couple appearances for him, especially the one against Detroit. It was a 0-0 game for 9 innings, and they go into extras in a 0-0 tie. Michael Tonkin hits the mound in the 10th and gives up a 5-spot to the Detroit Tigers. So I think it's specific components of their bullpen, which is still a bullpen issue, but I think it's one of those things that's just going to need more time to sort of sort itself out and figure itself out, because you are seeing a few names who look really good to start the season, as I mentioned, Drew Smith. And I think it really is – I don't think we've been able to see the value really in its fullest form yet, because it's so early in the season. I think it's going to work wonders having Edwin Diaz back. I know that seems like a very, like, Captain Obvious statement.
It's about getting to him, though.
No, I understand.
They can't use him.
I understand that. But my point is, last year, the amount of games that I covered that they lost in the 8th or 9th inning while he was hurt was unbelievable.
Could have been won if he was there.
The
is
Mets,
that what you're saying?
The Mets were a remarkably average team, and that's being polite to the Mets last year. And even still, I covered some games against some of the best teams in the league. Seattle, Texas, the World
Series
champion.
Seattle, that was disastrous
and
for the Mets.
The Mets were in every game until the 8th. Sometimes the 9th inning,
blew it up, and then
it was a collapse. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to need to see – it'll take more time to see how valuable it is having Edwin Diaz back as your closing pitcher. But again, it's going to come down to, as you mentioned, the guys that can get them there, because I've liked what I've seen from Drew Smith. I haven't liked what I've seen from Adam Ottavino so far, who he's kind of up, down, left, and right.
He's old now, too.
Yeah, you never know. The thing that's annoying about Ottavino is when he's at his best, that could be the dirtiest slider in Major League Baseball.
It's
when is he at his best is the question. But yeah, I think it was nice for these, you know, the Cincinnati series and the Braves series to see the Mets finally turn the bats on.
Well, yeah, it was a disaster to start the season where they really couldn't get anything going offensively, and there's still a lot of hitters that need to really find that spark. Pete Alonso still hasn't found it at all. He's hit a couple of homers, but overall needs to start hitting a lot better. Francisco Lindor has been off to a dreadful start to the season. Got his first homer the other day, but still, he's hitting under 100. Like, they need him to get going, and I'm sure he's obviously not going to be hitting this poorly the entire season, but we see this a couple of times with Lindor where he gets off to slow starts and he kind of digs himself a little bit of a hole, and people kind of question, is he worth the contract? Is he not worth the contract? Like, there's a lot of the discussion going on. So the offense needs to get going as a whole and be a lot more consistent. The pitching has been pretty good, given all things considered. With Senga out, that's a tough loss, and the 60-day IL, I still don't think they're going to see him for a while, but for the most part, the starting pitching's held up. Sean Manaea has been off to a nice start.
I was about to say, that's the person from this starting rotation that has excited me the most, is Sean Manaea, his first start, and that actually was the game that I mentioned against Detroit where they gave up a 5-spot in the 10th. They just couldn't hit for him, and he had his command was outstanding.
He didn't give up a run, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't give up a run. And again, the bullpen looked really good in that game, because I think he came out in the 6th inning, and I think they went through 3 arms before getting to Michael Tonkin's collapse in the 10th. I think it was Jorge Lopez. I know Edwin Diaz closed the 9th, but it was like Jorge Lopez, Drew Smith, and Edwin Diaz, I think, were the 3 pitchers, and then it went to Tonkin, and it was a full-blown collapse. But Manaea, because that was a move in the offseason that I was actually very high on when that news broke. I was like, that's a huge addition to their starting rotation that had some question marks around. I know that the start of the season has been very slow offensively, but it felt like as they were continuing to acquire players over the offseason, even Harrison Bader, who I know is not known for his offensive abilities all the time. He's more a defensive, athletic asset. But still, they were, you know, making the roster more meaty in the field and in the lineup. It felt like when the season started, and even when last season ended through the offseason, the question mark surrounding the Mets was going to be the arms. It was going to be the starting rotation. I would say the starting rotation more so than the bullpen. And I was very high on that Manaea acquisition in the offseason, and I'm really, after his first start, I'm really, really excited to see.
Luis Severino, too, not a good first start to the year against Milwaukee. He gave up 11 hits, but his next one against the Reds, a little bit better.
Yeah.
Hauser's been kind of not really what you need, so there's
one
still
good start. Kind of blew it up yesterday. Yeah, gave up five of the Braves' six runs.
There's still a lot of question marks surrounding the Mets' rotation, and obviously Senga possibly being out until the summer certainly doesn't help that. But with the bullpen, there's good pieces there too. I think they have a nice like back end right now for the most part. If you take Ottavino and then Edwin Diaz, I don't think Drew Smith is going to do this the whole year, but you know what? Five appearances, he hasn't given up an earned run. Solid for him, but yeah, you'll just get those couple of blow-ups from guys where it's just, are they going to be able to sustain ways to get to Edwin Diaz when they're using their bullpen a lot, and then Ottavino's down for a day, and even if Drew Smith is pitching as well as he is right now, are they going to be able to use him the way that they want to? There's a lot of questions, and they're still going to need some answers, but for the most part, since the first couple series against Milwaukee and Detroit, the Mets have kind of found their footing a little bit.
And one name from the starting rotation that I forgot to mention, who I'm also very high on, part of it to do with being able to watch him last season as well, is Jose Buto. Jose Buto got his first start against Detroit. He got no decision, but it was, I think, six innings, three hits.
One run.
Six strikeouts.
Yep.
He was brought up last year near the conclusion of the season. They brought him up from Syracuse, a young pitcher, kind of when they were, you know, booking the flights to Cancun, admitting the season was over, brought some young guys up just to get some looks, see what was going on. Buto got his first career win in his debut, looked really good last year, kind of was some of the brighter spots, supplied the Mets fandom some of their brighter spots of that end of the season that was pretty ugly. So I think between getting Manaea in the offseason, him looking good so far, you have Severino, who was not good in his first start, but in his second start, at least showed some improvement, showed a little more comfort, showed a little better command, too. I watched that game. I felt he had better command in that game. He was putting a lot of runners on base when he pitched against Milwaukee. But having, you know, Severino hopefully trending in the right direction, Manaea looking good through his first start, and then having a young arm like Jose Buto, who proved that he belonged up here at the end of last season, proved again that he belonged up in the major leagues at, you know, in the spring training, and gets his first start against the Tigers, who the Tigers are a good hitting team, and is able to put on the kind of performance he did. Those are definitely a couple bright spots from the rotation looking forward.
And I think the final note on the Mets pitching, and then we got to get into the quick note on JD Martinez, who has now suffered a setback on his delayed appearance for the Mets, is that I got to go back to the Edwin Diaz contract. Misses all of year one, and now year two, so early. We don't know what's going to go on with the Mets yet, but it's just like, man, paying him $20 million a year to ride pine because you can't even get to him. And he's healthy. So it's just like, I know in this league, you got to pay to get the guys that will not cause you stress in the ninth inning. But I knew once he signed that contract, there was kind of going to be a little bit of catastrophe. Like I just said, he missed the entire first year of that contract. Now he's back and he looks excellent. He looks maybe even better than he did before he got hurt.
Oh, he's looked untouchable so far.
Awesome. But when you can't get to him, and it's not even his own fault because he's healthy, it's like, dude, where is that money could have been sprinkled towards other relief arms that could get you the three outs. Obviously, with a guy like Edwin Diaz, you want someone like that. But I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, $20 million a year. I keep looking at that, and it's really not going to mean anything unless he pitches. And he simply can't get into games because the Mets don't put themselves into position to use their $20 million closer whatsoever. But only April 10th, things can change. And one thing that needs to change is that J.D. Martinez needs to get on this team and needs to get soon.
Yeah.
I was looking at the box score yesterday. The Mets had 12 hits. The only person that didn't have a hit was D.J. Stewart, and that's because he had a pinch hit opportunity. Every single person got a base hit. J.D. Martinez should be one of those contributors, and he's not there yet. I was talking about it last week. I understand why he's delayed. He's 36 years old. He took until March to sign because – you know, this free agency this year was just kind of weird. Like, no one was really taking guys like J.D. Martinez until the very end. So the fact that he's 36 years old, he needs to get his body going. And the reason his body's not going is because he didn't have a job. He needed to get a job. He got a job, and now he's delayed.
Shout out Scott Boras.
He needed to fill out a W-2.
He was really looking for one.
And now he receives a shot in his back because of back tightness, something that he's had back injuries in the past, but at his age, it's just like, man, that could hinder his performance significantly. You got him for 1 year, and the idea was he's either going to be the DH and he's going to help us make a push for the postseason as a wild card team, most likely. And that's a good bat to have. He was an all-star with the Dodgers of all teams
right.
last
big
year.
Big impact bat in that lineup.
100%. Like I said, he's been all-star at 35 years old.
He's been a big impact bat in every lineup he's been in.
Well, people thought he was like kind of done or like at least like past his prime when his last year with the Red Sox when he went to the Dodgers, and then he explodes for 30 homers last year.
And he wasn't even that bad last year with the Red Sox either. So, you know, you're hoping that he gets going, but if you're a Mets fan, it's like, oh, I want to see him play. But if you're the Mets in general, it's like, yeah, I really want to see him play because we're either going to trade him for prospects or he's going to help us make the push. That's why we got him. He's either going to continue to build this farm system into a top five program in the league or he's going to help make a push for the postseason. And yet he's not on the field.
Well, hey, is there anything wrong with him bolstering the farm system a little bit?
Maybe that's
why they brought him in.
But if he doesn't play, then you can't do that regardless. Yeah. You get no play and you get no prospects.
Well, also $12 million is an expensive price to pay to upholster your minor league system.
Well, let's get DJ Stewart some more at bats. He's going to get it going, DJ Stewart.
Yeah. He did hit a moonshot the other day
First hit of the year,
which is great at the end of the season too.
Dude, he looked good at the end of last season. That's part of why he's up here now. But no, I think the thing with you got me swapping everybody up now.
DJ and JD Stewart.
The thing with JD Martinez that's really frustrating about him, you know, having this process extended a little further, having his arrival, or I guess I should say return to Major League Baseball delayed a little longer, is this Mets team needs a power bat really badly because they've pretty much always, at least for the last few years, 95% of the power in that lineup goes through Pete Alonso and Pete Alonso only. You have a lot of fundamental hitters who can get into one now and then. Every now and then you'll see Lindor hit a second deck shot. Every now and then you'll see Nimmo hit a second deck shot. He hit a pair of them against Atlanta the other night. But the point is, I was a huge proponent last season, at the end of last season, because I knew the way in which Steve Cohen uses his checkbook and that he's not afraid to open it. I was a huge proponent of the Mets signing Shohei Ohtani.
He brings the wallet.
He brings the Amex. But part of the reason...
Gold Amex. Actually,
platinum Amex.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is.
It's like a...
And Steve Cohen has it.
And he has it.
Boy talk. My bad.
You can't even see it because you can't afford it.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, only people who can afford it can see it. I was a huge proponent of the Mets signing Shohei because I knew how Steve Cohen is willing to spend. And the biggest reason I wanted them to sign Shohei Ohtani was because I couldn't think of anything more terrifying than having a power bat platoon of Pete Alonso and Shohei Ohtani mixed in with the contact bats that they have in that order. Brandon Nimmo is a leadoff guy who's supposed to hit for average. Francisco Lindor, while streaky, while known to have slow starts, is supposed to be a fundamental hitter who can hit for average, who can spray gaps, and can hit one out of the park now and then. They need JD back up at the major league level because the Mets leave a lot of runners on base. They leave a lot of runners on base. Some of it is because they, again, have more. They're a more contact-heavy batting order than a power-heavy batting order, which, as a result of that, is a lot of lineouts, a lot of ground balls, a lot of, you know, balls hit right at people. You need another guy than just Pete Alonso to be trusted to jack one out and be able to, you know, hit a long home run or be able to spray the gaps when he needs to. Because that's the other thing. As J.D. Martinez has gotten older, yes, he's lost a little bit of power. I understand that, even though he hit 30 home runs with L.A. last year. But, you know, J.D. Martinez is such a fundamental hitter, and I've learned stuff about him. I got to meet him, actually. He's a really cool guy. He's just a baseball scientist. He's studying his swing all the time. And you could even see, as his career progressed, as he got older, what he lost in power, he made up for in being able to spray gaps. He's a guy who's just a fundamental hitter. He's not one of those, you know, no shade to a Kyle Schwarber. He's not one of those, like, strikeout or home run guys. He's one of those where, like, he has the power. He can hit you home runs, but he will also get on base when you need him to, because he knows how to spray gaps and he knows how to get them down the line. So I just think it's really frustrating to see a really potentially, you know, batting order altering bat like J.D. Martinez can be just further and further delayed. But it is nice, as we were mentioning, to see the Mets hitting a little more these last couple series.
Well, we are running close on our time limit here. I just want to bring up one last point. The Tommy John situation is not great.
Oh, Jonathan boy.
Jonathan Loaisiga goes down.
Yeah.
And now he's Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber. He's done for the year. Most recently, Framber Valdez with elbow discomfort.
Nick Pivetta on the Sox.
A lot of names just going down. A lot of names that went down last
Cole
year.
Cole obviously is out.
You know, so I think one thing, if we could just get a take from both of you guys, for me, what you can't do if you're Major League Baseball, and we're really not going to get super into it because we do got to bounce here very soon, but you put a pitch clock in, it worked out, the pitcher's adjusted, you can't just switch it after 1 year. 2 seconds, I know it doesn't sound too much, but it is. It's 2 seconds. You got to see how some of these guys use the clock. It does that much on someone's body, especially when they use their entire body to throw as hard as they possibly can. Now they have 2 less seconds to do that. That wasn't really too smart of a move, and we're starting to see that happen now.
Yeah, I don't want to blame it entirely on the pitch clock, but I do believe that it does play a role in this. It was a big adjustment for pitchers to have to the way in which they've always known to play baseball and the way that they've always had to, you know, condition themselves on the mound to be able to withstand however long their start was to go that day. I think they need to have a bit more time. They need to be able to have more time to come set. I do like what it has done for baseball. I think speeding up
Absolutely.
The game has made, because trust me, we all adore baseball in here. We could watch baseball all night, all day, whatever. But it's always been a weird thing with baseball. It's always been a weird relationship with baseball where I love it to death. It's my pride and joy. But I get why people found it boring. I understood why people found it boring. And I think the pitch clock was such a monumental shift that the game needed. And it's even a better watching experience when you're at the ballpark,
Fully,
too.
Yeah.
But there's still – I was even saying when the rules were being added in the first place and we were seeing these rule changes about to come out, I always said, be open to amendments. This is a big change. You're seeing how it's going. It's a drastic shift. You need to be open to amendments. So I think it's a mix of the pitch clock rushing pitchers a little bit. I also think that it's just that the new norm in Major League Baseball is throwing as hard as you goddamn can from the first pitch to the last. And I can't imagine, you know, no human body is supposed to be able to withstand throwing 98 miles an hour for 6 innings every start. I don't think that that's, you know, what, you know, humans were designed to do, but that's what baseball is now demanding the way people have, you know, continue to progress in the sport and you know, numbers and different statistics and different technology we have for training. I think it's a mix of things, but I think that viral video now that's getting around a little bit of Justin Verlander talking about in postgame, he mentioned, guys, it's going to have to work itself out. He called it a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that we're just going to have to kind of see how it goes, what they're going to do, but they can't make any too drastic changes or shifts.
It's a mix of a lot of things. I think the pitch clock definitely does play a role. And one of the first things that I was a little concerned about with the pitch clock was, is it going to lead to more pitcher injuries? And you know what? Last year, it didn't. Last year, I think everything was relatively normal. Things were okay. But like you were saying, Will, that 2 seconds.
It's not a lot of time, but it kind of is.
And I don't really understand the rationale behind the change, where it's like, why the pitch clock did drastic improvements last year. So why exactly does it need to be tweaked more, right?
Exactly.
Especially like the pitcher's already adjusted to it. Now it's like, why are we just completely turning that on a dime already? And they're already putting enough stress in their arms already. Like Verlander was saying, obviously people are throwing a lot harder now. Everyone's trying to throw as hard as they can, put as much spin on the ball as they can. Everyone's got so much torque with their motion now. And we're seeing it kids at a young age where kids are 10 years old and they're learning how to just chuck the ball as hard as they can and get as much velocity as possible.
And I feel like the changes that the MLB, like the people at the top of the MLB, I don't want to sound like some sort of anarchist, like challenge the system type person, but it feels like
Here comes the most anarchist comment ever.
That the people at the top of the MLB, like it feels like all the rule changes or all the different amendments that they make to the game as it goes on are all like stupid in some way. It always feels like it's very out of touch. Like even some of the new base guarding rules, I think, are kind of stupid. But that's a conversation for another time. I really, really don't understand why they felt such a strong need to have to take 2 seconds off the pitch clock.
And it's also like the people, the top brass of Major League Baseball, it's not like they can relate to the players in a sense that like, okay, 2 seconds, like that's kind of a lot. Like it's different experiencing it firsthand rather than just kind of saying like, oh, this will bump up the pace of play and it'll make our product more viewable. Like I understand that, but there has to be more of a catering to the players and like wanting to adhere to their needs. And I don't think with the new adjustments of the pitch clock, they did a good job of that.
Well, we'll just have to see how it plays out. It's obviously not playing out to any benefit so far other than it is saving time and it is bringing people back into the game. But, you know, you give and you take. You got to see what the priority is. It's always the fans, but the fans are there because of the players. But we'll just have to see how it happens. But, Jack, Brian, this was awesome. Thanks for hopping on and joining myself. I'm Will Talent for Jack Warner and Brian Raybacks. This has been Nosebleeds, a production of WFUV Sports. Yankees going for the sweep tonight. The Mets looking to take a series from the Atlanta Braves early on this April. Thank you, and enjoy your baseball week, everyone.
William touchdowns with the send-off.